This is the NBC Theater. From the NBC Theater in Hollywood, an hour-length dramatization of a continental novel that is written with charm and grace and 100 minor enchantments. The Crime of Sylvester Bonnard by Anatole France. Today's broadcast version, which preserves all the niceties of the original and adds one or two Parisian touches of its own, is by Vincent McConnor. We bring it to you now. The Crime of Sylvester Bonnard by Anatole France.
'60. When I left the train at the Melun station, night had already spread its peace over the silent country. My traveling bag, filled by my housekeeper, seemed so light in my hand that I swung it about just as a schoolboy swings his strapped package of books when class is let out.
Well, well, it is Monsieur Bonnard.
It was Paul de Gabriel addressing me thus at the very top of his voice from the height of his cabriolet.
How are you, Monsieur Bonnard? Give me your valise and climb up here beside me.
My valise was pulled up, and I followed after my valise. My host pleased me by his straightforward simplicity.
I know you've come to make an inventory of my uncle's library, but I think you may find other pleasures at the Chateau Lugence besides old parchments. Somebody able to keep you company.
Ah, yes. Your letter mentions something about a curé who writes books.
I mean my wife. She's not a learned woman, but there are a few things which she can't define pretty well.
Indeed.
Yes, then there's Mademoiselle Jeanne, a child with the fingers of a magician and the soul of an angel.
Is this delightfully gifted young lady one of your family who I have never met?
Jeanne is our guest. She has lost both her parents.
What a pity.
Her father managed to get us into some rather serious trouble, and we didn't get off with a fright either. But enough of that. As you may have heard in Paris, I've inherited the chateau from my uncle.
Yes. I knew your uncle many years ago. I once lived here in this part of France.
Oh.
Nearly married and settled down here.
My uncle, of course, hadn't lived here in some 30 years. Died at Monaco. The chateau, I can tell you, was a sorry sight when my wife and I came here. But you must be weary.
I am indeed.
Then you shall sleep. Oh, look. Look there. You can see the towers of the chateau through those trees. Welcome, Monsieur Bonnard. Welcome to Lugence.
August 11th. All day long I have been in the library classifying manuscripts. It has been a warm day, and I fear I was drowsing at my work when...
Monsieur Bonnard?
Madame?
Do we interrupt you?
Oh, no. Come in.
Monsieur, this is Jeanne.
Jeanne?
Monsieur?
She was very young, dressed in black. She had large, intelligent eyes of a gray as sweet as that of the sky above the Isle of France. She had the slim grace of a young tree. I could not describe how much this child pleased me at first sight. My gaze caused her to blush, and she broke away from Madame de Gabriel and ran off through the house with the speed of a bird.
Oh, little crazy creature. How can one be so shy?
But she is charming.
I should be much surprised if my husband had not already spoken to you of Jeanne. We both love her very much. We worry about her future. Would you look at this statuette?
Oh.
It is Saint George.
Charming.
Of course, it is not finished.
It has real spirit. Who is the artist?
Jeanne, who fled at the sight of you. She makes many of these statues. Well, what do you think of it? Could she earn her living in Paris by modeling statuettes like this one?
I think not.
Oh.
Oh, but there's no reason to regret that fact. This young creature is made to love. I could believe it from her face alone. Keep her for the domestic hearth. Find her a husband. There only is real happiness.
Husband? Why, she is an orphan with no dowry.
Oh, that is difficult.
Monsieur, you are discreet. I can tell you everything. Her father was a banker, one of your closest friends. He went into a colossal speculation and it ruined him.
Most unfortunate.
We made his acquaintance at Monaco during the winter we lived with Paul's uncle. And we were captured by him. We risked much money in a completely hazardous undertaking. All was lost, a public scandal. Well, you must recall his name, Noël Alexandre.
Noël Alexandre. Mm,
his wife was a charming person. She showed great courage after the death of her husband. And died a year after him, leaving Jean all alone in the world.
Clémentine.
Clémentine Alexandre. You know the name?
I know it well.
Poor little Jean. Her parents left her without a sou.
How fortunate that is so.
Fortunate, monsieur?
I would not wish that anyone but myself should provide for the child. The daughter of Clémentine must not have her dowry from anyone but me.
Monsieur Bernard, you are weeping.
Many years ago, I loved Clémentine de Lessay. But she was ambitious. She married a bank clerk with better prospects than those of a young scholar. Madame, is her grave nearby?
Yes, monsieur.
Will you conduct me there?
Gladly, Monsieur Bernard. I will take you there this very afternoon.
We passed through a gate upon which words of hope were graved. We walked down an alley of cypresses and took a narrow path contrived between the tombs.
It is here.
Clémentine.
Shall I leave you, Monsieur Bernard?
No, madame.
As you wish.
Since you have been so kind as to be my guide, I ought to tell you what feelings are awakened in my heart. I feel myself like some old, gnarled, and mossy oak which awakens a nestling world of birds by the shaking of its branches. Unfortunately, the song of my birds is old as the world and can amuse no one but myself. I, too, am very old.
This morning I found 3 gray hairs.
Let them come without regret, madame. Time deals gently with those who take it gently. You, madame, who knew Clémentine as a wife and mother after her hair had become gray, you cannot imagine her as I remember her still. A fair young girl, all pink and white. Very like her daughter.
Like Jeanne.
Madame, if an old fellow can be of any use to anybody, I would wish, with your help, to devote my last energies and abilities to the care of this young orphan.
Monsieur, Jeanne is a minor. You cannot do anything for her without the authorization of her guardian.
You and your husband are not her guardians?
No. Her guardian is Maître Mouche, notary in Paris. My husband would take you there, but we're leaving next week for the South, a Cannes and Monte Carlo. We will not return to Paris until the new year.
And the girl, little Jeanne?
She has already returned to Paris this afternoon. Paul drove her to the train.
You will give me a letter to her guardian, this Maître Mouche?
Of course. Though I'm afraid you will not be able to come to any understanding with him. He is a most serious person.
What kind of persons can you expect me to have any sort of understanding with at my age, except serious persons?
With those like yourself.
Myself?
The innocent who wear their hearts upon their sleeves. Maître Mouche is not exactly a man of that sort. He's cunning and I fear somewhat light-fingered. But I will give you a note to him. To Maître Mouche.
I have returned to Paris. I have returned to my city of books. But my apartment on the Quai Malaquais seems empty and strange. Thérèse, my housekeeper, is alarmed at my actions. She follows me every time I step outside the door.
Monsieur, where are you running like that?
Where am I? Oh, I'm going to visit the bookstalls on the riverbank.
Is that a way to run out into the street? Bareheaded, like a crazy man?
Then give me my hat quickly.
And your gloves, monsieur? And your umbrella?
I would walk only as far as the terrace of the Luxembourg. There I would sit at the foot of the statue of Marguerite de Navarre, drowsing in the golden September sunlight. My thoughts were of the child. My thoughts were of little Jeanne and of her dead mother, and of the notary, Maître Mouche, whom I must visit. As I sat there, I became aware of two young students seated nearby. Became aware without thinking of their conversation.
And have you read the volume of Courageau?
Yes, yes, it's reasonably accurate.
This lad has intelligence.
What do you think of the new article by Laroque in this month's review?
It's filled with many excellent things.
A brilliant student, this boy.
Have you read the Tableau des Abbés Benedictines by Sylvestre Bonnard?
Certainly not. Sylvestre Bonnard is an idiot.
This lad's a fool. A complete fool. May 5th. I have seen him in his office, Maître Mouche, the guardian of Jeanne. Small, thin and dry. His complexion looks as if it were made out of the dust of his pigeonholes. I have heard him speak, and he has a voice like a tin rattle.
I am pleased, Monsieur Bonnard. Delighted that you have taken such an interest in my ward. You see, I do not think we are placed in this world simply to amuse ourselves. No, I do not believe it.
Monsieur Mouche, as you read in Madame de Gabry's note, I am an old friend of the child's parents.
Ah, Madame de Gabry, such a distinguished lady, so kind. She would invite my ward to her house more often, only I would not permit it. No.
And why not?
Oh, it would give the dear child a false idea of life if I allowed her to have too much pleasure.
I should like to visit Mademoiselle Jeanne at her school.
Certainly, Monsieur Bonnard. An old friend of the family, certainly. But I must make you out a permit. Here we are.
Do I really need a permit for such a visit?
Oh, it is essential.
Very well.
Permit Monsieur Sylvestre Bonnard to visit Mademoiselle Jeanne Alexandre on the first Thursday of each month at Mademoiselle Prefère's private boarding school, Rue des Morts.
The first Thursday?
The first Thursday.
Mademoiselle Prefère's face gave me the idea of a russet apple preserved for an entire winter in a freezing attic. I explained to her the purpose of my visit and gave her the permit which had been filled out by Maître Mouche.
Ah, tell me, Monsieur Bonnard, what is your relation to Mademoiselle Jeanne?
I met the child at the residence of Madame de Gabry. As I used to know her parents, the friendship which I felt for them naturally inclines me to take an interest in their daughter.
I trust that, like Monsieur Mouche and myself, you deplore those crazy speculations which led the parents to ruin and reduced the daughter to poverty.
I know nothing whatever about how the father lost his fortune. My only concern is the child.
Ah, that child. She is not unintelligent, but she cannot resign herself to learn things by rule.
Really, mademoiselle? When one has learned something, it makes little difference what method has been followed in the learning of it.
But, Monsieur Bernard...
I see the young lady.
Mademoiselle Jeanne has a penance to perform and a class lesson to give. But I should be extremely sorry to let you put yourself to the trouble of coming here, all to no purpose. I shall send for her. Only first, Monsieur Bernard, as is our custom, allow me to place your name on our visitor's register.
If you wish...
You rang, mademoiselle?
Yes, Louise. Tell Mademoiselle Jeanne to come here immediately.
Certainly, mademoiselle. Certainly.
I see from this permit that you spell Bonnard with a D.
Correct.
Forgive me for being so particular, monsieur. But my opinion is that proper names have a kind of orthography. We have dictation lessons in proper names at this school. Historical proper names, of course. I shall write your name here.
You are too kind, mademoiselle.
And after your name, what shall I put down as your profession?
Profession?
Retired merchant? Employee? Independent gentleman?
If you must put down my profession, I suppose it is that of a scholar.
Scholar?
Member of the Institute.
Member of... Oh, monsieur, I have only profound respect for all decisions of the Institute.
Indeed.
As for our dear Jeanne, she is, as you must know, most intelligent. I am proud of her. She has what I call a happy disposition. Oh, here she is. Oh, my dear child, look at you. What a state you are in.
Jeanne did indeed present an odd appearance. Her hair was combed back and held by a net from which loose curls were escaping. Her dress, much too short, revealed stockings much too large and shoes worn down at the heel. A skipping rope was tied around her waist instead of a belt. Mademoiselle Préfère glided across the polished floor and out of the room. Sit down, Jeanne.
Monsieur?
Now, dear, I want you to talk to me as you would to a friend.
Yes, monsieur.
What about your school life? Your studies?
I studied the piano.
Good.
Chronology of the kings of France. Sewing, drawing, catechism, deportment.
I see you have a skipping rope about your waist.
Oh, yes.
It is a fine amusement, but one which might be excessive. You could seriously injure your health, and I should be grieved at that, my child.
You are kind, monsieur, to come and see me, to talk to me like this. I did not thank you when I came in, because I was too much surprised.
Your manners are enchanting.
Mademoiselle Préfère will punish me because I tied the skipping rope around my waist.
Oh, that is too bad.
Yes, monsieur. It is too bad. Because when I am punished, I have no more authority over the little girls.
Authority over the little girls?
The youngest class. I wash and dress them, teach them how to behave, how to say the alphabet. But I cannot make them obey me when I wear a dunce cap.
If I understand you, mademoiselle, you are both a pupil here and a teacher?
Yes, monsieur.
It is a condition of existence very common in the world. You are punished, and you punish.
Oh, no, monsieur, I never punish.
Oh, then your indulgence must get you many scoldings from Mademoiselle Préfère.
Yes, monsieur. Every day.
Well, let us talk about that little statuette of yours. The one I saw at the chateau with Madame de Gabry.
My Saint-Georges?
It was quite prettily made. What has become of it?
Oh, I have it here, in my pocket.
Oh.
I had no other place to put it, and I sat down on it by mistake.
You must make other figurines.
But I have no wax for modeling.
No wax? In this republic of busy bees? I will bring you some my next visit.
Dear child, I'm afraid you will tire you, monsieur, and your time is so precious.
My time is my own to do with as I will. But you are quite right. I must go.
Monsieur, I thank you for your kindness in coming to see me.
My child, remain always good, truthful, and brave.
You will come to visit me again?
I will indeed, very soon.
My cravat is missing. Therese!
Coming, monsieur.
I have searched every drawer.
Monsieur, you should have told me that you were going out.
Would it not be a great deal better to put my cravat in a place where I could find it without your help?
Your cravat is not lost, monsieur. Nothing is ever lost in this house because I have charge of everything.
Then where is it?
Please allow me time to find it.
Don't you know, wretched woman, that today is the first Thursday of the month? Mademoiselle Jeanne will be expecting me.
Here is your cravat, monsieur. You see, it was not lost.
Somebody's at the door.
Eh?
The bell. The bell, Therese,
no,
the bell.
No need to shout, monsieur. I hear it quite clearly.
Well, tell whoever it is that I am out, for as soon as I get this wretched cravat tied, I shall be out. Well, who is it?
Oh, I fear I have ducked in at the wrong moment.
Monsieur Mouche, come in. Sit down.
Thank you, monsieur.
What brings you away from your office? Nothing wrong with Mademoiselle Jeanne.
No. I have come, Monsieur Bonnard, to tell you, first of all, that in the future you may visit Mademoiselle Jeanne at the boarding school any day at your convenience.
Oh, that's kind of you.
Henceforth, the establishment of Mademoiselle Préfère will be open to you every day between the hours of midday and 4 o'clock.
Oh, exceedingly kind.
And I consider it my duty to give you certain information about the person to whom I have confided my ward.
You mean?
Mademoiselle Préfère, whom I have known for many years, is in possession of my utmost confidence.
Naturally.
She is, in my estimation, an enlightened person. She has principles.
And principles are rare these days, monsieur. Everything has been totally changed. This epoch of ours cannot compare with the preceding ones.
Oh, my stairway is a good example of that. 25 years ago, it allowed me to climb without trouble. Today, it takes my breath away, wears out my legs. And the books I once devoured by moonlight, today, even in the brightest sunlight, they exhibit nothing but a blur.
Hmm. Monsieur, I am enabled by the character of my profession to know a great deal about people. A notary is, to some extent, a father confessor.
True.
I deem it my duty, monsieur, to tell you what a lucky chance enabled you to meet Mademoiselle Prefere.
So?
This lady, who is, of course, quite unaware of my presence in your apartment, spoke of you just this morning in the terms of the most deepest sympathy. I could not repeat them without betraying her confidence.
Oh, do not betray it, monsieur. I beg you, do not betray it.
As you wish.
I had no idea that Mademoiselle Prefere knew anything about me. But since you have the influence of an old friend with the lady, I will take advantage of your goodwill.
Certainly, monsieur.
To ask you to exercise that influence in behalf of Mademoiselle Jeanne. The child, for she is still a child, is overloaded with work. She is at once a pupil and a teacher. She is overtaxed. In addition, she is punished in the most petty way.
Ah, but alas, Monsieur Bonnard, she must be trained to take her part in the struggle of life. One does not come into this world simply to amuse oneself and to do as one pleases.
One comes into this world to enjoy what is beautiful and what is good, to do as one pleases when the thing one wants to do are noble, intelligent, and generous. An education which does not cultivate the will is an education that depraves the mind. It is a teacher's duty to teach the pupil how to will.
The education of the poor must be conducted with a view to the future state of dependence which they must occupy in society.
What a completely wretched idea.
Perhaps you are not aware that Noel Alexandre died a bankrupt. His daughter is being educated almost by charity.
To say such a thing is to pay oneself back, and then the statement ceases to be true.
The liabilities of the estate exceeded the assets. However, I was able to effect a slight settlement with the creditors in favor of the girl.
If she were entrusted to my care, I should make of her perhaps not a learned woman, but a child full of bright intelligence and full of life, in whom everything beautiful would awaken some gentle, responsive thrill. Of course, I do not pretend for a moment to impose my educational system upon Mademoiselle Prefere.
Of course.
I only ask you to persuade her to give Jeanne less work.
Such a thing is possible.
Ask her not to punish the child, except in case of absolute necessity. Let her have as much freedom of mind as the regulations of the school permit.
I will do my best. Now, monsieur, I must leave you.
You have made me late. I was going to visit the child this afternoon.
But now you can visit her any afternoon.
Oh, of course, of course. Well, then, I shall see her tomorrow.
Good afternoon, monsieur.
Good afternoon.
After Monsieur Mouche was here this morning, I was set free from all regulations.
Indeed.
I can walk in the garden whenever I like.
Good.
I can model the wax which you brought me last week.
Excellent.
Oh, Monsieur Bonnard, I know that I owe all this to you.
Perhaps I had a little something to do with it, but mark you, only a little.
Mademoiselle Playfair must like you very, very much indeed to have become so good to me all of a sudden.
Does that surprise you?
But certainly.
Does it? Well, tell me why.
Why, because I can see no reason at all why you should please Mademoiselle Prefere so much.
Oh, then you think I am displeasing?
Oh, no. Well, that was a foolish thing to say, stupid. And still, I do not see any reason why you should be so pleasing to Mademoiselle Prefere. Nevertheless, you do please her a great deal. She called me this afternoon and asked me all sorts of questions about you.
What sort of questions?
She wanted to find out about your apartment.
My apartment?
Even asked how old your servant is. She asked me, Guess.
I can't.
I will give you 1,000 guesses. You give up?
I do give up.
She asked if you like good food.
And how did you receive this shower of interrogations?
Oh, I replied, I don't know, mademoiselle. She called me a little fool, told me that the smallest details of the life of an eminent man should be observed. Pleased to know, she said, that Monsieur Sylvester Bonnard is one of the glories of France.
Stuff. Listen, Jeanne, Mademoiselle Préfère has become good to you.
Only recently.
Try now to be good to her.
It is easy for Mademoiselle Préfère to be good to me. But it would be difficult, indeed, for me to be good to her.
My dear child, you must consider your schoolmistress as occupying the place to you of the mother whom you have lost.
Monsieur, how could you say such a thing? You never knew, Mama.
Jeanne.
My poor Mama.
My child, I am very old. Many secrets of life have been revealed to me. Believe me, the future is shaped out of the past. Whatever you can do to live here today contentedly and without impatience will help you to live some future day in peace and joy in your own home.
My own home?
Now, if you should ever have a serious cause of complaint against Mademoiselle Préfère or anyone else, I shall be here to take your part. Remember that.
Thank you, monsieur.
Oh, dear, monsieur. How is your health today? Oh,
Mademoiselle Préfère.
Did this sweet child tell you she is now on our list of honor?
I am pleased. And I am inclined, mademoiselle, to attribute this happy circumstance to your affectionate vigilance.
Oh, a pleasure, monsieur.
I have taken the liberty to send you a few books which may serve both to instruct and amuse your young ladies.
But I thank you for all of them. Oh, it is such a beautiful afternoon.
Soon we will have a holiday.
Holiday? But you have no relatives. Madame de Gabry is in Monte Carlo. You cannot go away.
That is true, monsieur.
What in the world will you do alone in this great house?
I do not know.
We will do everything possible to amuse her. I will take her to the museums and
Yes, mademoiselle.
And to your apartment.
My apartment?
If you will permit.
Of course. Of course, that's a first-rate idea.
Oh, I would like that.
Excellent.
We will come to you on the first day of the holiday.
I shall await your visit with the greatest anticipation.
From Hollywood, the NBC Theater is bringing you a dramatization of The Crime of Sylvester Bonnard by Anatole France. We will resume with Act Two after a brief pause for station identification.
August 12th, first day of holiday. I waited for them, Mademoiselle Préfère and the charming Jeanne. Waited to welcome them to my city of books.
Monsieur Bernard, what a lot of books. Have you really read them all?
Alas, I have, mademoiselle. And that is the reason why I do not know anything. For there is not a single one of these books which does not contradict some other book. So that by the time one has read them all, one does not know what to think about anything.
Jeanne, see all of Monsieur Bernard's books.
I see them, mademoiselle.
Jeanne is at the windows, looking at a sight more beautiful than any books. The River Seine.
Look here, monsieur. See how it sparkles in the sun, like a flowing of fire. But see how cool it looks on the other side, under the willow trees. That little spot pleases me most of all.
So the river has charms for you. How would you like to make a trip on the steamboat?
Oh, Oh, yes, monsieur.
We could board it just below the Pont Royal.
It is a charming day for an outing. Meanwhile, I will do a bit of crocheting. I happen to have it with me.
We might sail as far as Saint-Cloud.
Oh, I have never been on a steamboat.
Pardon, monsieur?
What is it, Therese?
Could I speak to you for a moment in the dining room?
Certainly, if the ladies will excuse me.
Oh, please do not trouble yourself on our account. You must treat us like members of your family in every way.
Now then, Therese, what is it?
Monsieur, you never think about anything, and it is always I who must think about everything. Luckily for you, I have a good memory.
What have I forgotten this time?
You were going off, sailing on the Seine, without a word to me about what this little lady would like to eat.
I have not the slightest idea.
At her age, one eats like a bird. You, monsieur, are very difficult to please, but at least you know what is good. It is different with young people. They know nothing about cooking. It is often the very best thing which they think the worst, and what is bad seems to them good. This is because their stomachs are not quite formed yet, so that one never knows just what to do for them.
My good Therese.
Tell me, if the little lady would like a pigeon cooked with green peas, and whether she is fond of vanilla ice cream.
Prepare whatever you think best, and whatever that may be, I am certain the ladies will be quite contented.
I am asking you only about the little lady. As for that old frizzle-headed thing...
She will hear you.
I don't care what she likes.
I returned to my city of books and found Mademoiselle Préfère crocheting as calmly as if she were in her own home. Jeanne, on the other hand, was gazing at my books. I took down Vecellio's collection of ancient costumes and opened it for her. Here, my dear, amuse yourself with this volume. I am sure you cannot help enjoy it because it is full of magnificent engravings, all colored by hand.
How beautiful. You were saying, monsieur, that we would travel down the river. But this book takes me on a greater journey. Costumes of Italy and Persia and China. Oh, I would like to travel very, very far away.
In that case, mademoiselle, you must arrange yourself as comfortably as possible for traveling. Now, put your chair on its 4 feet and put your book on the table.
Yes, monsieur. Oh... Here is the wife of a Doge of Venice. How noble she is. How rich her costume. Oh, how I adore luxury.
You must not express such thoughts, child.
It was an innocent statement, mademoiselle. There are splendid souls in whom the love of luxurious things is natural and inborn. At that moment, the gate of the city of books opened, and a handsome young man made his appearance, ushered in by Therese. My housekeeper either throws people out into the corridor or pitches them at my head. The young man handed me a letter of introduction bearing the signature of one of my most illustrious colleagues. Monsieur Gély?
Yes, Monsieur Bonnard, that is my name.
It says here that you are in your third year at the École des Chartes.
Correct, monsieur. I am working now upon my graduation thesis.
Have we not met before?
No, monsieur. I have never had that honor.
Oh, strange.
I am preparing a thesis on the condition of Benedictine abbeys in the year 1700. I have read your works, monsieur.
I remember. Do you not sometimes meet your friends on the terrace of the Luxembourg?
True, monsieur, but how could you possibly know that?
Most amusing. Most amusing, indeed. You were saying...
I am convinced that I shall be unable to finish my thesis without your advice.
Indeed?
Also, there are certain ancient manuscripts in your library which I need to consult, monsieur.
Oh, such a thing could be arranged, but not today. Mademoiselle Préfère, this young man is a most promising scholar.
I have great respect for all scholars.
Your servant, mademoiselle.
Monsieur?
And this young lady, Monsieur Gély, is Mademoiselle Jeanne Alexandre.
Monsieur?
Mademoiselle amuses herself with a volume of Vecellio?
Such exquisite engravings.
Yes, they are indeed beautiful.
Well, look at the color of the lady's hair. Some have a honey tint and others a golden tint.
And that is from the different dyes they use.
Dyes?
Yes, the women of Titian and the Veronese all tinted their hair.
Oh, such talk, monsieur. It is not for the ears of a young girl.
Pardon, mademoiselle.
But many ladies dye their hair, even today here in Paris.
I know nothing of such things.
Monsieur Gélie, we were just planning a boat ride before dinner. Won't you join us?
Well,
it's too much, so it's too pleasant to spend the day indoors, and Mademoiselle Jeanne would be delighted to have you accompany us. Is that not right, mademoiselle?
Yes, monsieur. It would be quite pleasant.
Then it's settled. Come along, everybody. Therese, hats, cloaks, my cane. The regularity with which Mademoiselle Jeanne visited my city of books week after week made me feel extremely grateful to Mademoiselle Préfère. She is quite amiable, and I must really be a monster not to like her. One afternoon in early December, I invited them to my apartment for dinner.
Why did you open the door, monsieur? Where is your housekeeper?
Oh, Thérèse has been ill for several days.
The poor woman. Is she in bed?
I believe so. Though one hour she is up and the next hour she is down, I thought tonight we might dine at a restaurant.
No, monsieur. No. Respectable people never dine at restaurants.
Therese!
There you are, my little one. I have made all arrangements. The concierge will cook your dinner.
Perhaps I might help.
No, little lady. If I want anybody to do anything for me, which I do not, I would get somebody less delicate. What I want is rest. And that is a merchandise which is not sold in the shops.
Jeanne, come here to the window.
Monsieur?
Look. Look down there. Monsieur Gélie is walking on the quay. Go and talk with him, child.
Oh, may I, Mademoiselle Préfère?
Of course, my dear. I want to talk with Monsieur Bonnard. Run along.
Jeanne flew down the stairs and out across the quay to young Monsieur Gélie. As I watched from my window, I became aware that Mademoiselle Préfère was chattering away behind my back. And apparently she had been chattering for quite a time.
And oh, how I pity you, monsieur.
Pity me?
A man like you, a man so superior, having to live alone with only a servant. How cruel such a life must be.
I do not find it so, mademoiselle.
You have need of repose, of every kind of attention. Just think, monsieur, you might fall sick.
My health is excellent.
Oh, there is no woman who would not deem it an honor to care for you, to bear your name and share your existence. There is none. My heart tells me so.
At my age, mademoiselle...
You are in your prime, monsieur.
At my age, I have no intention of changing my habits.
But you are not happy.
I find as much happiness in life as my character and my circumstance permit.
You need to have beside you a mind capable of comprehending your own. Cast your eyes about you. You must have many charming acquaintances. One cannot be a member of the Institute without going into society. No sensitive woman would refuse you her hand.
Mademoiselle Préfère,
I am a woman, monsieur. My instinct never deceives me. There is something within me which assures me that you would find happiness in marriage.
Yes, marriage?
A wife to cherish and preserve your good health. Oh, how joyfully I would shed the last drop of my blood to preserve the life of a scholar, a member of the Institute. And any woman who would not do as much, I should despise her.
I am very old, mademoiselle.
Well, I protest, monsieur.
I fear that your advice comes to me much too late in life. Still, I will think about it.
You will consider it, monsieur.
I will consider it. December 15th. Tonight I have been to the establishment of Mademoiselle Préfère for supper. To my surprise, I found that the notary, Maître Mouche, was also a guest.
Isn't this charming, my two dearest friends?
This roast is excellent, mademoiselle.
Oh, thank you, Monsieur Mouche. I am not too bad a cook.
I thought that Mademoiselle Jeanne would dine with us.
Oh, no, no. Such a thing would be contrary to the rules of our school, monsieur. It might wound the feelings of the other students among whom it is necessary to maintain a certain equality. More wine, monsieur?
Oh, thank you, mademoiselle.
Monsieur Bonnat, it seems to me that a toast is in order.
A toast? To whom, monsieur?
Why, to yourself and mademoiselle Prefer.
What's this?
Permit me to offer my congratulations.
Look here,
Monsieur Bonnat is so affectionate, so superior, so good and, oh, so great a man.
Mademoiselle, please. Either I explained myself rather badly when you were in my apartment, or I totally misunderstood you now in your own house. In either case, a positive declaration is absolutely necessary, and immediately.
Monsieur?
Permit me to make it now, to make it plain. I am totally ignorant of the nature of this marriage project which you seem to be planning for me. Marriage which would be an unpardonable folly at my age.
Oh, these learned men, these studious men, they're like children. Yes, Monsieur Bonnat, you are a real child.
Monsieur Bonnat, you have already agreed to marry the lady.
Agreed? What are you saying?
Oh, do not accuse him, Monsieur Mouche. Do not think any evil of him, I beg of you. Or pity for me.
Mademoiselle, I want none of your tricks. I have no intention of marrying you or any other. Now, if you will excuse me, I will take my leave.
But your pastry, monsieur, your brandy.
My hat. December 20th. All week I have heard nothing from the Prefer establishment. Naturally, I have been anxious for news of little Jeanne, so this afternoon I took my way to the door of the boarding school. I asked the maid to see Mademoiselle Jeanne, but it was another face which appeared in the doorway.
Monsieur, I regret that I cannot allow you to see Mademoiselle Jeanne. I cannot possibly permit it.
Why not?
The reasons which compel me to request that your visits be less frequent hereafter are of an excessively delicate nature. I must beg you to spare me the unpleasantness of mentioning them.
I have been authorized by the child's guardians to see Jeanne every day, if I so desire. And now, are you opposing the will of Monsieur Mouche?
Monsieur Mouche desires, quite as strongly as myself, that your assiduities come to an end.
Be kind enough, Mademoiselle Prefer, to let me know his reasons and your own.
You insist upon it?
I do.
This house, Monsieur Bonnat, is an honorable house. I have my responsibility. I must watch like a mother over each of my pupils. Your assiduities in this house are being interpreted by the most respectable and the least suspicious of persons in such a manner that I find myself obliged, both in the interest of my establishment and in the interest of Mademoiselle Jeanne, to see that they end at once. Immediately. Good day, Monsieur.
Good day.
Monsieur.
This is the de Gabry residence, is it not?
Yes, monsieur.
I should like to see Madame de Gabry.
Madame is at Monte Carlo.
But I thought she was planning to return.
No, monsieur. Not until the first of the new year.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I tell you, Monsieur Mouche, that the child must be removed from Mademoiselle Prefer's school.
But, Monsieur Bonnat, such a thing is not possible.
Why not?
Because Mademoiselle Prefer is within her rights in this matter. She is an intelligent woman with an irreproachable character. But you, Monsieur, appearances are greatly against you.
I am not interested in appearances.
As a matter of fact, and the small sum which I held to defray the expenses of my ward has been exhausted. In the circumstances, I greatly admire the kindness of Mademoiselle Prefer, who allows Jeanne to remain in her school without charge.
I will pay for the child's education.
Oh, no, monsieur.
Why not?
Because I, as her legal guardian, I could not allow such a thing. Good day, monsieur.
Good day. Mademoiselle.
Yes, monsieur?
Tell me, my child, are you a student of that school across the street?
Yes, monsieur.
Little Jeanne Alexandre, is she one of your playmates?
Oh, Oh, no, monsieur. Jeanne Alexandre is not my playmate.
No? Why not?
She is only kept in the school for charity. They make her sweep out the classroom.
I knew it.
Mademoiselle Prefere says that Jeanne is a bad girl. They lock her up in the dark room, and it serves her right. I am a good girl. I am never locked up in the dark room. Goodbye, monsieur.
There is only one thing for me to do. I shall go straight across the street, up to the front door, and demand to see Jeanne. I shall do it immediately.
Monsieur Bonnard, it is you again?
Listen to me attentively, girl.
But, monsieur, I have orders not to admit you.
Take this gold piece. It countermands all other orders.
Well, thank you, monsieur.
I must speak to Mademoiselle Jeanne.
Such a thing is not possible.
You must make it possible.
You will promise not to tell Mademoiselle Préfère?
I will tell her nothing.
Very well, then, monsieur. Go around through the garden. There's a little door in the back. I will bring Mademoiselle Jeanne there. Hurry, monsieur, through the garden.
Is that you, Jeanne?
Yes, monsieur.
Tell me at once, are you well?
Yes, monsieur, I am well.
I have heard that you are made to sweep out the schoolrooms.
And the kitchen. My guardian does not pay for my schooling any longer.
He is a thorough scoundrel. Why have you not written to me?
I was watched.
Oh, my child, you are shivering. Here, put my cloak around your shoulders. Oh, it is beginning to snow.
Yes, monsieur. It's very cold. Thank you.
Now, my dear, I am taking you away from here.
Where, monsieur? Where are you taking me?
To Madame du Guebry's. She is not in Paris, but you can find refuge there until she returns. Come along. You remember me?
Certainly, Monsieur Bonnard.
I request refuge for this young lady until Madame de Gabry returns from Monte Carlo.
But Madame has already returned.
What?
Monsieur and Madame arrived unexpectedly this afternoon.
Well, then take us to them at once. Come along, Jeanne.
Yes, Monsieur.
This way, sir.
Well, Monsieur Bonnard, while my wife takes the girl upstairs, you and I had better have a talk.
Paul, I am very weary.
Sit here, old friend.
Thank you.
Now, do you realize what you've done? Abduction? Kidnapping? You've gotten yourself into a nice mess.
What are you saying?
You are liable to a sentence of imprisonment of not less than 5 nor more than 10 years.
For saving an innocent child.
That is the law.
But this notary Mouche is a rascal, and the Préfère woman is a hussy.
And you are a kidnapper.
Oh, dear me.
I can quote from the code, Article 354. Whosoever shall abduct any minor or minors, or forcibly remove them from the places in which they have been placed by those to whose authority they have been confided, shall be liable to the penalty of imprisonment. Now, that's quite plain, is it not?
Quite plain.
Well, then you understand the extreme gravity of this action which you've committed.
Well, Paul, what am I to do? Am I disgraced? And have I also disgraced the poor child whom I only wanted to save?
You want to know what to do? Don't do anything.
What?
Your situation is bad enough as it is. Now, don't try to meddle with it. Unless you want to create additional difficulties.
Very well.
Now, I shall visit Monsieur Mouche the first thing in the morning. If he turns out to be the rascal you say, I shall find a means of making him harmless.
Oh, the poor child was exhausted. She fell asleep the moment I put her to bed.
I must go home. My housekeeper will think it is I who have been kidnapped.
Come back in the morning, monsieur.
You are kind, madame. Very kind.
quite a morning, Monsieur Bonnard.
Paul, what has happened?
Oh, many things.
You saw the notary, Monsieur Mouche?
No, matter of fact, I didn't.
Why not?
Because he wasn't to be seen.
What do you mean?
Monsieur Mouche has gone away, disappeared, decamped with all the money entrusted to him by his clients.
The rascal.
The commissaire de police is hunting for him at all the ports of France. So you have nothing more to fear from that source.
And Mademoiselle Prefer?
I had an interview with her this morning. I told her that if she dared to question your character in any way, you would sue her for libel.
Why hadn't I thought of that? Oh, Paul, I am extremely grateful.
There's no need for gratitude. I enjoyed every minute of it.
Where is the child, Jeanne? Could I see her?
Oh, I'm afraid that isn't convenient at the moment.
Is she ill?
Oh, no. She's gone off with my wife. They're shopping for something more serious.
Send me all the bills.
Certainly not. This gives my wife great pleasure. We have no children of our own. If it were not for certain circumstances, we would like to adopt the girl.
What circumstances?
The circumstances which concern you, my friend. Now, come into the study and I will tell you. I visited the Salle Commune this morning to look into this matter of adoption. And I discovered...
Now then, is everything in readiness? I hear her running up the stairs.
Everything is ready, monsieur.
You're certain, Therese. Nothing's forgotten.
I never forget, monsieur. It is you, always, who doesn't remember.
Well, don't stand there jabbering. Open the door.
I never lose things, and I never forget. No matter what people say.
Hello, Therese.
Come in, mademoiselle.
Thank you.
Welcome, my child. Welcome.
Good morning, monsieur.
Mademoiselle, I beg you in the future to address me by my proper title. You must say, good morning, my guardian.
Guardian? Oh, then it has all been settled?
Just this morning.
Oh. Everything is arranged. Monsieur Paul and I went to the Salle Commune and before the Justice of the Peace. From today on, you are under my authority.
Oh, my guardian. I have never known such happiness could be possible.
Now, what would you say if I should invite you here to live with Therese and me?
Here?
To finish your education under my guidance. To remain here until... well, as long as you wish to stay.
Oh, monsieur. Oh, that would be heaven.
Therese has cleaned up and furnished a room for you.
This way, my child. I will show it to you.
Thank you, Therese.
And Madame de Gabry says that you can move in today, if you wish.
Oh, yes, I do.
You go ahead, Therese.
Certainly, monsieur.
Now then, my child.
Yes, monsieur.
Be gentle and forbearing with Therese. Make every allowance for her.
Oh, but I am very fond of her.
I, too, am fond of her. But I also am very sharp with her. Therese is a humble woman who has lived a long time in the habit of doing good. She has become hardened and stiffened in that habit. But even when she is hard, she means to do good. I want you to respect her great age and her great heart.
Yes, monsieur.
Go to her now, my child. Arrange your room in whatever way seems best and tell Therese that you admire the way she has prepared it for you. Even if you don't. Ah, my child, we are both happy to have you here, living with us.
Thank you, my guardian.
The city of books is a happy city these days. We have few visitors except young Monsieur Gélie, who nearly every day calls upon our young lady. She is fond of Gélie. Her eyes betray that fact. One day, I suspect, they will be betrothed. I've told Jeanne as much.
I? Betrothed?
Yes, one day, you and Gélie.
Such a thing is impossible.
Nothing is impossible.
But how could I be betrothed?
Oh, the usual way, I should imagine.
But I have no dowry.
No dowry? My dear, do you see all those books upon the shelves?
Yes.
How many do you think there are?
I do not know. Several hundred?
There are several thousand. And they are worth a considerable fortune. Observe that large volume on the bottom shelf.
Yes?
It alone is worth many thousand francs. And they're all for you, my child.
For me?
I shall sell them for your dowry.
Oh, but I couldn't allow that.
It'll be a present from your dead mother.
My mother? I do not understand.
Someday, perhaps, I will explain.
My guardian, I am so happy, and yet I feel as if I wanted to cry.
I pray, my dear, that you and Julie will have a long and happy life.
Oh, but he has not yet spoken to me of marriage.
Oh, he will in time. Julie is a shy young man, but a first-rate scholar.
I will never want to leave you.
Perhaps before that, I will leave you. That will be much easier for you.
No. No, you must never leave me. Never.
May God's blessings be with you, Jeanne, and with your children, and with your children's children forever.
You have heard The Crime of Sylvester Bonnard by Anatole France, as adapted for radio by Vincent McConner. Be with us at the NBC Theater next week for a new dramatic version of the James Hilton classic, Lost Horizon, and the following week for Portrait in a Mirror by Charles Morgan. Commencing September 24th, the NBC Theater will resume its participation in college-supervised courses in world literature. If you wish to increase your own knowledge and appreciation of the great novels and novelists, we suggest that you write for full information on these correspondence courses. Write to the NBC Theater in care of one of the following universities or colleges: the University of Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky; Kansas State Teachers College, Pittsburgh, Kansas; the University of Arizona, Tucson, Arizona; Texas College of Arts and Industries, Kingsville, Texas; and Brooklyn College, Brooklyn, New York. In today's cast, Bonnard was portrayed by Rolf Sedan. Paul was Don Randolph. Madame Gabre was Lillian Baeff. Jean was Jean Young. Therese was Noreen Gamill. The student was Eddie Firestone. Jelly was played by Tom McKee. Mush was Earl Lee. Mademoiselle Prefere was Gail Bonney. Louise was Inga Yolis. And the child was Anne Whitfield. Your announcer, Don Stanley. The producer of the NBC Theater is Wade Arnold. The NBC Theater is directed by Andrew C. Love. This program came to you from Hollywood. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. And the chimes are ringing out the good news that Theater Guild on the Air returns next Sunday. You'll hear your favorite stars in adaptations of Broadway plays when Theater Guild on the Air returns next Sunday, September 10th. This weekend, 400 Americans have a holiday date with death. Stay off the list. Be careful. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.